They could make so much money if they would just sell a World's Worst Father mug with a picture of Gendo on it.
I'd be surprised if somebody hasn't already done that.
Welcome to the Skiffy and Fanty Show's Screen Scouts.
Goodbye, all of Evangelion.
Or as I said goodbye in 1997. I'm Sean.
I'm Brandon.
I'm Iori.
And today, we will be discussing Evangelion 3.0 plus 1.01, Thrice Upon a Time, the conclusion to the rebuild of Evangelion, directed by Studio Kara, including Hideaki Anno, Kazuya Surumaki, Katsuichi Nakayama, and Mahiro Maeda. And I'm very excited to get into that.
Yeah. But before we do that, reminder, if you get thoughts, if you've seen these, they're all on Amazon Prime, at least for US audiences. I don't know how available they are outside, but do a Google search. You can let us know what you think at skiffyandfanty.com/listener suggestions. We're putting together a listener mailbag episode, and an Ava-themed episode would be awesome.
So, now that Sean has pumped nearly all of Ava into his ocular jelly, just let me be the first to say, omedeto.
Omedeto. Sean has literally speedrun all of Evangelion just for us to get to this point, which is a kind of torture, I imagine, on Sean's part.
No, actually, it was quite enjoyable, to be honest. I will say that the original series, the ending is not very satisfying. And I got to the end of that and I was just like, sure, congratulations. Congratulations. Like, that's all you can really say about the original ending. Going through the rest of it was really interesting as, like, a weird set of revisions of a vision of a story that didn't get made in the original. So I didn't really think of it as torture. Nothing I watched, I would say, was bad. I did find the first part of Death and Rebirth annoying because I just, like, I didn't realize I was watching a recap episode until I watched an hour-long recap. Which I was like, where's the new stuff, Anno? Where's the new stuff, you jerk? But it's in there somewhere. I don't know where it is. Yeah, but no, overall, it was actually pleasurable. Look, it's giant robots and a guy who just screams.
Yeah.
What's not to love?
This is true. That's often all we need.
I mean, let me just tell you, the English dub scream that they put in to the original series and End of Evangelion, when he's just like, and he's screaming into the ether, it is the greatest television scream I've ever heard in my entire life.
Yeah.
It's better than the Wilhelm scream. They should replace it in all movies. That should be the scream they put in instead. Should just be whoever did the English dubs of the original stuff, bring them in, and just have, like, Shinji screaming freaking everywhere.
Yeah, I mean, it's not a being thrown out of a window scream. It's, like, a pure inner turmoil scream.
Yeah, I want that replacing all throw out of the window screams. That's the scream I want to hear every time someone gets chucked out a window.
Fair enough.
Yeah, Stormtrooper falls over, that's the scream.
Uh-huh. So, I feel like, especially since there is a lot of Evangelion, we should obviously, like, describe what takes place in 3.0 plus 1.01.
I think first you need to catch the audience up on the, 20 fucking years of material that came up before it?
There are not enough hours on Earth to do that, and it's kind of a miracle that Anno has found extra hours in order to make them in the first place.
Cliff notes at forum.
Right. The cliff notes up to this point is, for the most part, Shinji Ikari, our protagonist, who is going through it for the most part after being given the opportunity to pilot a giant robot called an Ava in the attempt to stave off the invasion of these massive alien entities known as angels, and not having a pleasant experience throughout, discovering that, like, this is just like one giant, very physical, very deadly metaphor for the difficulties of trying to maintain social interactions. And that supposedly ended at some point, because there's a movie called The End of Evangelion, and now we're back here because, as Hideaki Anno has previously said in an interview, Evangelion is a story that repeats. So now we have come all the way back to the beginning, with Shinji Ikari still going through it, but at some point exhibiting a little bit more agency in an attempt to gain control over his life and the lives of the people that he cares about, only to learn that all of those things were futile and kind of selfish and wrong, and struggling with the fact that now he's going through it even more, and people are suffering in ways that he doesn't even have the language to qualify. His friends can no longer age. He just watched someone's head get blown off in the movie just before this one. People are just, like, not having a good time the entire time. And they're all blaming it on him. And it is kind of his fault.
Yes, but there's also been, like, a 14-year time skip, and no one wanted to talk to him about why they were angry at him. So he had a pretty rough time in that third movie.
Just pure social trauma the entire time. Meanwhile, his father, Gendo Ikari,
a terrible parent,
who's a terrible parent and is responsible for the emotional trauma that puts him in the Eva canon in the first place, is mounting this large-scale attempt to shore up more power, both physically and metaphysically, for ends that we still have not determined up to this point. But Misato and the crew of Misato's new semi-spaceship Wunder have brought it upon themselves to stop Gendo and Nerve's evil plans, and at some point that just involves Shinji getting back into the robot, and that becomes a whole thing.
You know, like, I first saw Eva when I was 14, and Shinji getting the fucking robot was already starting to be kind of a meme, but as I have aged with the benefit of, like, compassion and hindsight, now I'm just like, I wouldn't have wanted to get in that fucking robot either. I understand where this child is coming from. And honestly, the older I get, the angrier I am about the complete failure of every adult in this series to protect the children around them. Except Mari.
Yes. We're gonna have a lot to say about Mari, because Mari is a new character to the rebuild.
The only responsible adult on this whole franchise.
So I will say, to hit on one of the things that Iori just mentioned, so a lot of the feelings that I have tied up in the rebuild of Evangelion, and in 3.0 plus 1.0 in particular, is the fact that fandom spent a lot of time projecting a kind of idea about Shinji that I never really liked. That Shinji was whiny, that he didn't have enough agency in his own life, that the story is or should be about him learning to gain more agency and project a more essentially masculine kind of self-concept in order to gain more control over his life. And it's only when you get into the rebuild, when you learn that a lot of the energy that is tied up in, like, the way in which Shinji says, I mustn't run away, is not gaining agency or gaining, like, more confidence, but is just pure people-pleasing, and that makes me really, like, want someone to just, like, walk up to Shinji and give him a very warm hug and tell him that he does not have to do any of this. You could just go back to wherever you came from and go to sleep and never think about your father again. But that's not what happens. And people taking advantage of him as a result is kind of why the world just blows up several times in this entire canon. And I'm kind of grateful as a result that the rebuild is about Shinji learning that that's what's happened, and that there is a way that he can stop that, that doesn't require him, like, giving his body and his mind up to people who don't care about him. So, like, I'm really invested in the rebuild as a series. I'm really glad that it exists for that reason.
I do think that's interesting, the idea that you can read the ending of this very confusingly named movie. What's the actual title? It's Thrice Upon a Time. I'm just going to call it that from now on so I don't have to keep saying the numbers anymore.
And there's, like, a musical repeat sign in it. Also, did y'all see 3.0 plus 1.0 or 3.0 plus 1.01?
Brandon said the latter, but he meant the former.
I did. Apologies. We saw 3.0 plus 1.01, which is the version that is available on Amazon Prime Video.
Wait, there's another version of this?
Yeah, there's the one that I saw in March in theaters. And then in June, Studio Kara released a slightly updated version because they weren't happy with how some of the animation came out.
The numerical reference is simply to let you know that there is more footage. That's all. And it's like fractions of a minute of footage.
It's not that much more.
I am inserting at this moment just Shinji Ikari just screaming. That's what I'm asserting right here, because I am just like trying to, like, when they did Death and Rebirth, like there's like Death and then there's Rebirth, but then there's one that's like 68 minutes and there's one that's 90 and there's one that's 28. It's like, my God, just like, just have a version. Like, this is the one. Like, this is the correct one. Everything else is wrong. It's so confused. It's like having 19 different Snyder cuts, except at least it's a better movie. Like,
you know what? Actually, as a creator, I find this so reassuring, because, like, yeah, you can put a thing out there and then you can be like, whoops, fucked that one up. Here's the reissued version where I fixed that. Rebuild actually is just that. It's looking at the thing you spent a couple decades of your life on and going, you know, I didn't do it as well as I wanted to. Now that I've leveled up as a creator, let me have another crack at it.
Fair enough. Yeah.
I like that idea that you can revisit the work that you've already done and fix the flaws you see in it 5 or 10 years down the line.
And ultimately that those repairs that you make to that work is with like a creative goal in mind, that I'm not trying to plumb this franchise for all that it's worth in order to make more money. I'm trying to fundamentally bring an end to all of the assumptions that people have made about this work that I think are potentially dangerous.
I mean, Brandon, you say that, but there were 5 different restaurant tie-ins plus a pop-up cafe.
I've seen television ads of horses in horse races turn into Evangelions. Evangelion is kind of cursed and kind of needs to be put out of its misery.
Huh. Well, okay, so to take us back, I think one of the interesting things that you'd raised a moment ago, Brandon, was that one way you can interpret the end of Thrice Upon a Time is this idea that Shinji is making a choice to do something essentially for other people rather than being, you know, sort of told to do things, pushed in to do things, being part of someone else's plot, which is, in large respect, how we end up at this point in the first place, is Shinji's involvement in his sperm donor's plot. So I think that that's really important, because that's part of what makes that ending somewhat, I think, really work, is that it's not just like a moment where Shinji's like, I'm going to understand my father, although that is part of what's going on in the ending, but also more about him taking an action that he has been getting screamed at all along by, especially Asuka in particular, that you know, he needs to make choices for himself, and he can't just have everybody tell him what to do, and he can't just be paralyzed into inaction. He has to make some sort of decision. He makes a decision that I think, broadly speaking, is considered to be the right decision, but who knows? Like, he made a universe without Evas, and so inside of the anti-universe, inside of the Oberon stick of cross inside the universe, like, whatever that thing was called. But my God, he just made a whole universe, and, like, everybody got to go back to, like, being regular peoples, and he's, like, wanders into, he's, like, got a girlfriend? Like, what is happening? I don't know.
I hope she's not his girlfriend, because she was, you know, his mother's friend from college. And I think if you hold someone as a baby, it is automatically morally reprehensible for you to date them after that. My personal theory, and I am sticking to this until I die, is that they are running out of that train station because Shinji is late for the therapy intake appointment Mari has scheduled for him for.
Yeah.
But the content of that conversation at the very end, you know, she's very intimate's not quite the right word, but like very close in his proximity. There's a lot of touching that is involved. And he even just says to her, like, you're still cute. And there's a lot of like this subtle hinting that and then they like kind of run out with their hand holding hands. And while I guess it could be that it's just a friendship, it just seems very coded to be some sort of romantic inclination.
But she's treated Asuka the same way the entire time. the cuddling and the flirting and the teasing.
That's true. So maybe that's just the way she's just like as she's like the
ultra
mom. That's
how she engages with people. She's the cool, flirty aunt.
Yeah, like the thing that I kind of got from Mari ultimately, and like Mari is very important to the rebuild. Anno has said so himself. Mari exists almost uniquely to help Anno in the goal of destroying Evangelion once and for all. But like the thing that stands out to Mari, to me about Mari is, as a character, she is the only person who is ever engaging earnestly with anyone at any point in time. She never is hiding anything. She's never shy or demure about any of her engagements. She is never dismissive or dishonest. She is almost entirely quirky every time that she engages with somebody because that's just who she is.
I would say she hides a fair amount of things, if only by omission.
I wouldn't say that she's hiding those things, just that those things didn't come up.
Okay, fair.
She's constantly earnestly engaging with everyone around her in a world mm-hmm. where no one else is.
It would probably have been really awkward if she had straight up said to Shinji, "Oh yeah, I went to school with your mom." That would have derailed a lot, right?
Yeah, I think like the difference between is that when she's not saying things, it's not because she's trying to be deceptive, but when other characters do, they are deceiving. They're intentionally leaving out information in order mm-hmm. to deceive other people. Mm-hmm. But again, I'm not inside this character's head, so who knows what they're really thinking. Maybe they're secretly also a god and they're just on Earth manipulating people.
I mean, when you look at what piloting an Eva does to you.
Yeah.
She could be a god.
There's some times there where she's pretty close to it.
Yeah. Pretty much. Yeah. But like, through that lens, that last scene to me is actually even more radical because it doesn't immediately strike me as Shinji and Mari are together. Like, I actually didn't get that vibe. And I also like fundamentally reject that vibe, so maybe I'm biased. But like, that's not the atmosphere that I got. What I got was, now Shinji has somebody that he can also be earnest with. And like, the idea that Shinji is not being hesitant or having like any second thoughts about being able to be perfectly honestly kind of weird and quirky with someone in this moment is kind of endearing considering everything that happens in the rest of Eva canon. Because the story is, in its own way, kind of uniquely about how young men not being given opportunities to be emotionally honest with themselves literally has the capacity to destroy the universe. And now we've been given this moment where even if it's just the one person, even if it's just Mari, and even if Mari is just his friend, he has this moment to just be silly with someone. And that is kind of cool. And like, part of the reason why I dig the rebuild as a franchise is it's a lot of moments like that. A lot of moments of at least trying to, and often very well succeeding, to let Shinji know, hey, everything that you're seeing everyone else around you doing, you don't have to do it. You can stop.
Well, okay, so we were talking about Mari, and I think, Yorta, you have many opinions about Mari that you might want to share about this character. I mean, I don't know why I would think that. It's not like we had any kind of conversation prior to the recording of this episode that would suggest to me that you might have opinions.
It's not like I had to make you go back and review part of the video before we started because you had missed one of the most important parts of the plot.
Well, look, I'm sometimes just not smart. It's fine.
Well, they also completely changed the art style in your defense.
Yeah.
Like, I will also say that I saw that scene and went, wait, I know who this person is, but that doesn't make sense. So it has to be someone I haven't met before. And then I watch it and it's like, oh, wait, no, yeah, that's her.
Yes. When Gendo does his big, this is why I am tortured inside monologue, we get thrown into his long flashback sequence in a nice little sketchy art style. And Mari is there with him, eating lunch, taking classes.
As you do.
Introducing him to the woman who will become his wife. So, in a way, Mari has just always been at the root of the toxic masculinity in Evangelion, trying to pull it back out, because she saw that Gendo was poorly socialized. She tried to help him socialize. Whoops, now he's ending the world.
Yeah.
I guess I'm going to fucking fix that too. Mari is just always in the background of Evangelion, trying to clean up all the things that the people she went to college with have ruined. And therefore, I love her. This was actually a bonus chapter at the end of the manga, and everyone was like, oh no, no, it's not canon. It was a chapter where it's just like Mari and Yui in college being friends.
If I recall correctly, when that chapter of the manga came out, the manga's artist actually hadn't even run the idea by Anno at that point. It just kind of happened. And it congealing as a narrative point of the movie just kind of also happened organically in a way that just kind of like great minds thinking alike out of nowhere.
Yes, now the movie has made that canon. You see Mari in all these flashbacks, like in the room when they're holding baby Shinji and stuff.
And what pray tell, do you think the fans thought of this?
Ah, hell. You know, it's kind of funny that we have so many people hating on Mari and saying she's a cheap marketing ploy when there is actually almost no Mari merch to be found. She has less merch than every other character, which is really depressing because, like, after I got out of the theater, I went to Parco to the Evangelion store because Mari was my favorite now and I wanted, like, a pin or something. There were no pins. I wound up getting a glasses case because Mari has less merch than every other character, including, I think, Gendo.
That's just weird. Mari is such an interesting and fun character in this whole series, and it just seems so strange to me that that would not be a more present person in terms of the merchandise. I mean, the character's a lot of fun.
A lot of the fan base hates her because they equivocate her with Anno's actual factual wife. So,
and it's very bad and very creepy.
Reception to the movie in Japan was very polarized. Like, it was super duper love or hate. And the hate camp was very firmly angry at Anno for getting better and dealing with his depression and marrying. They were upset that Anno had engaged in healing because they felt it was unrealistic. I read a lot of really shitty blogs about this that were just people frothing their rage onto the internet. How dare Anno act like it's realistic to work through your trauma?
And they framed it especially as, how dare Anno tell the story of someone healing through having healthy relationships with the opposite sex? Because we can't get that. It's like, what?
Yeah, a lot of people projected onto Shinji. So when Shinji grew and healed and therefore became someone they could no longer identify with, they were very angry about it, and they made it about Moyoko because they felt that what had changed Anno was getting married. There was a lot of criticism of Mari's insertion into the story as, this is just an XP for his wife. This character is a stand-in for his wife, and she saves Shinji at the end because Anno's talking about how happy his marriage has made him, and this is so unrealistic because no one's ever going to love me. I hate this. This shouldn't exist.
Which is a thing that Moyoko absolutely hates, by the way, just to mention. And has, like, written in her newsletter, please stop doing the thing. Please don't interpret this work so intensely about real people that you get to make real people uncomfortable. Which she's right about, very obviously.
She's just like, I'm not Mari, please stop proxy hating me through Mari.
I mean, it's so strange to me because I know that Anno has had to deal for literally decades with just fans being annoying people sometimes. Because I used to go to Fanime in San Jose, and Anno had gone a few times as a special guest. And I remember my first Fanime when he was there, and I went because, like, oh, that's the Evangelion guy. Like, and he's doing a talk about a thing that he's doing now that he's working on. And I went, and the translator, the very first thing he said was, do not ask me questions about Evangelion. Do not ask. You got the ending that you got, and I'm not... This was obviously after end of Evangelion, so this is in the early 2000s. And he just said, you got the story that you wanted. Like, it's don't ask me. I want to talk about my samurai project now. Leave me alone. And it's clear that that had to be said because he had gone to conventions many a time. And that's what he's being inducted with. It's just constantly people asking him to, like, explain Ava to him. And him just being like, no, I'm not going to do this. And there's a weird, like, parallel to this show in that, like, the thing that some fans are doing are things that are less violent than what happens in Ava, but are very similar to the kind of, like, removal of one's agency of, like, you're just meant to be, like, you know, the little puppet up there that tells me all the answers to the things I want. But that's not how this whole project works. I mean, even I would argue this tries to give maybe too many answers, in my opinion, with how the conclusion works. I think it tries to explain too much for me. But the whole idea with Ava is, like, a lot of this is you need to interpret it yourself. Like, there isn't, like, a god body that tells you what you're supposed to think about everything. You're supposed to take the clues and the information. And you need to sit with it. End of Evangelion and even the end of the original series has these moments where, like, this story is not telling you explicitly what you're supposed to think about what is happening right now. You need to watch this again and sit down and actually have, like, some self-reflection. And this still has a lot of that. It's a much more action-oriented, and it has, I would argue he does monologue quite a bit. And there is, I would say, maybe for me too much explanation of things, but there is still a lot being left to interpret in how this concludes with Shinji's destruction of the Evas and the creations of these other universes, and even with the scene we were talking about it with him and with Mari. Like, there's lots there of, like, we need to sit with it and think about what these are meant to mean. And the story is not going to give us the answer, and going to the director and writers and asking them to give you the answer, it's such a, like, it's a cop-out of your responsibility as a consumer, as the one who's watching and enjoying the thing, that you need to do that work. Someone else telling you what to think is, like, the opposition of being a critical thinker about the things that you enjoy. And, yeah, so Ava seems to be just one of those, like, perfect examples of a media product that this is what you're supposed to be doing. And by subverting that and asking, please tell me what I'm supposed to think, you're, like, ignoring what is going on in the story. You just want to have these clean black and white answers, but that's not how the real world really is. And that's not how media always is either.
I want to touch very quickly on a word that you used, which is introspection, because that kind of matters to me a lot.
Oh, please, yeah.
Ava as a canon overall. Because I do really think that Evangelion as a franchise is concerned with the fact that being a person is very difficult and requires a lot of work. But no one is ever going to tell you what that work looks like, because everybody's getting it wrong. And the through line that you're supposed to get from that story as a result is watching Shinji struggle, watching Shinji realize that other people are struggling in ways that do not make it easy for him to get help from them. And as a result, asking the question, well, what do you do when everybody around you is having that same struggle? How do you actually get out of that cycle of everybody having unhealthy relationships with each other? And not only is that a thing that you cannot just ask the creator for the answer for, but Rebuild as a part of the franchise is directly concerned with putting Shinji in as many positions as possible where we get to see him actively ask those questions or have conversations with people that has the potential to give him those answers, and see what the process of him wrestling with those things actually becomes. He gets to talk to Kaoru, and Kaoru tells him, hey, these things that you have done are potentially unhealthy, but you can stop them at any time, and I'm willing to teach you how. He gets to learn that there are consequences to the actions that he has taken previously without any forethought, and that he has a responsibility to process the decisions that he has made and find ways to actually atone for those mistakes. And the part that matters to me in particular in 3.0 plus 1.01 is that not just Shinji, but Rei and Asuka as well are given opportunities to interact with people who actually on some level have it more figured out than other people. Because the very first thing that they do in the movie is leave their robots and walk all the way to a place where no conflict is taking place and spend several weeks there in the presence of people who have experienced what is essentially an apocalypse for the longest period of time. People who literally cannot leave their zone for fear of the consequences of the Ava franchise literally making them sick and killing them. And all of these people are nice and well-adjusted. Several of them literally know that Shinji is responsible for the near-third impact that makes their overall living situation nearly uninhabitable, but no one treats him cruelly as a result. Rei gets moments to actually engage in human ways, and people are like, yes, we understand that you are trying to get to know this experience, and we're not going to judge you because you've never had these experiences before. We're just going to give you these experiences entirely and without judgment. And even Asuka, who is like really going through it and taking a lot of her own personal frustration out on Shinji, is given opportunities to have healthy interactions and is rewarded by those healthy interactions. And like, that's the answer to the question that everybody has about Evangelion. What is this supposed to teach me about how I can make my life better? You do the work, and the work will be hard and long, and you will not know when the work has come to a conclusion. But the work itself is rewarding. There is a subset of people who missed that. There are people who hate the third village as a result, because they think that it's boring, because they think that it doesn't have enough intrigue, not only in the this is a giant robot movie sense, but like they felt that it was very simplistic to have a space where people are just trying to survive and there is no immediate trauma taking place in their life. But like, this is what the world will look like if we ever had this experience. Like, well, at least the world, this is what we hope our community would look like if we were to have a similar experience, where people are willing to come together and acknowledge this is not an ideal situation, but we can make do, because if we don't, we will suffer.
And the third village is supposed to be based on a real place. It's supposed to be based on the Ghibli village, where Anno actually lived and worked for a while when he was dealing with his depression.
What's weird to me is that, to me, one of the most compelling parts of this entire film is, in fact, the village sequence. Because it's the... So the movie opens with a big old action number, and then it calms down, and then we have this calm moment, and then there is a very big action set piece that is the conclusion of this, which does have some moments when it pauses, but those pauses are still, like, very much in the moment of, like, the world, the universe is ending, and I must replace it because I must be back with the woman I love, and, like, fuck the rest of you. Like, I make a super hive mind, and we're going to exist in a weird universe, and we're in the anti-universe. Like, there's still lots of that big, lofty, like, this is still scary bad news. But in that scene, that is the moment when we're watching, like, what being regular people actually means in the context of a world with giant robots and big alien monsters and giant explosions and cities that literally go down underneath the ground and all of this wild stuff, that here are these people trying to live, and here are now these folks who have been involved in the brutal violence of this war now being brought into this community and seeing what survival is like. Rei literally plants rice. It's a big thing. She joins a bunch of other women in planting, and all of Rei's scenes I thought were fantastic and really interesting because they centered on this Rei not actually being the Rei that we've come to expect, because she's referred to as the copy, you know, throughout this sequence. And so a lot of the conversation is like, well, who are you? And like, what should we call you? What should your name be? Well, maybe you should figure out your name, right? What do you want us to call you? Find out. Maybe ask somebody else what they think, right? Figure that out for yourself. Oh, here's a cute baby, right? What does it mean for a baby to be cute to me? What does it mean to me for me to have these emotional feelings about this other being? That all is, I think, integral to understanding more about this character who has been so mysterious for so freaking long. And to give us some human qualities to a character that has often not been able to be human.
I mean, we keep talking about Rei like she's a singular, but we have to be fair to the fact that
multiple.
This is one of many, many, many Reis, and one of them does deserve to start being a person, even if she can't actually live fully away from the medium of LCL, at least one of them got some good times.
But, oh man, I was a little traumatized by when Rey dematerializes into Gatorade goop.
I had to walk away from my computer when that happened. I'm very sorry.
I was in a theater. There was no place to go. I had to just sit there and process and quietly sniffle.
It's one of those moments where I was like, yes, Shinji has been involved in some really horrible things, but like Shinji has been repeatedly exposed to incredibly traumatic events that a child really shouldn't be exposed to. And this is yet another one. Somebody that he clearly cares about just explodes before him into nothingness, and he has to like...
And this is like 2 months after he watches his Kaoru also explode in front of
him. Yeah, he's just watching all of these people that he cares about die in these pretty gruesome ways.
It's not just that it happens. It's like the sequence. It's the entire sequence of how it happens. He watches Kaoru, the one person who, like, went out of his way to, like, specifically care for and, like, value his feelings, die gruesomely in the middle of a fight, and then commits himself to never want to engage with an Eva ever again. They get to the third village, and he doesn't want to interact with anybody as a result, based on all of this heavy guilt, and then Rey goes out of her way on a regular basis to check in on him and be concerned and show as much compassion as possible. And then the very last conversation that she has with him as she is dematerializing is, thank you very much for giving me the opportunity to actually bond with you. I am going to delete myself now. And he has to just watch her dematerialize. The thing that gets me about the rebuild in particular is, outside of the very strange supernatural experience that everybody is obviously having because this is a giant mecha anime, the losses and the consequences of those losses are perfectly human. And we are watching Shinji be, for the first time in the entire franchise, the kind of person who is not only forced to have to wrestle with those emotional consequences because no one will let him not do so, but actually gets to do so and gain some closure as a result.
I think a lot of the hate for the conclusion has been that people signed up to watch a mecha fight and what they got instead was like learning how to grieve, healing generational trauma.
Did they watch Eva? Like, at all?
You'd imagine, right? That's how we got to the end of Eva, remember?
Yeah.
When you watch original Evangelion, you cannot, if you're really watching it, come to the conclusion that this is just about big mecha fights.
I mean, you'd think, right?
but there is so much to what is actually underneath all of that that eventually gets explored in its own way in the original series and then explored in a very different way in End of Evangelion. You just simply cannot come to the conclusion that this is just another big robot fight show.
I want to speak very quickly to that because, like, the interesting thing about 3.0 plus 1.01 as an antithesis to End of Evangelion is that, like, at least the, like, fandom myth of End of Evangelion, given all of the very hostile experiences that Anno has had with fans at that point, is that the End of Evangelion movie is Anno making the most spiteful version of exactly what people wanted. You wanted fights? The fights are unnecessarily grotesque and no one actually wins any of them. You wanted sex appeal and fan service? All of it is creepy and weird and bad, and if you don't feel bad about it, that says something about you as an individual.
Ray, let me put my hand through your breast into your heart.
You wanted the movie to come to a satisfying emotional conclusion? The satisfying emotional conclusion is, what if people who have not emotionally grown get exactly what they want, which is destructive energy? And what if somebody learns that that was not good and has no recourse for it afterward? But 3.0 plus 1.01 is very meta about those exact same ideals. Going back to Rey and the fact that there are many Reys and we get to see only one of them actually actualize as a human. The movie also hints at the fact that Asuka is also manufactured. And on a meta level, that strikes me as this kind of observation that fans have latched onto these two young women purely for romantic value, that not only have they been robbed of humanity, but for the, until, like, the heat death of the universe, multiple versions of them exist solely to fulfill the validations of people who they do not actually have any attachments to. And they get closure about that because someone gets to realize that that's not healthy. The final fight that Shinji has with Gendo is not just an observation about the fact that these two men have a very hostile personal relationship that will not actually be resolved by violence, but that the entire facade of violence, the very dramatic idea that you need a big fuck-all fight in order to come to emotional closure, is uniquely neither healthy nor dramatically valuable in its own right. Because at the end of the day, you tell those stories because you want people to learn and come to some kind of genuine resolution. And that doesn't always need somebody to fight. But also, if nobody has learned anything, the fight will always be the same everywhere all the time. And the movie literally does that by showing Shinji and Gendo in two opposing Evas, literally not being able to make a dent in each other while literally destroying sound stages of every place that Shinji has ever been in. Watching entire, like, fabricated worlds be destroyed because ultimately neither of these men have stopped to ask each other, hey, how are you doing? Maybe when we answer that question, we can move from this point into another point. And then Gendo is like, yeah, you're right. Maybe I should talk about the fact that I lost my wife.
You make it sound like it's a much nicer conclusion that he draws. It's more like, yeah, you're right. Let's talk about my wife. That's more accurate to the tone.
No, but this is important, right? I hate Gendo Ikari.
He's not good. And it's just like he's had his he's like angel fight himself. Like he's got like this cyclops thing going on. He literally gets shot at one point and part of his brain comes out and he puts it back in his head. Like it's just he's got issues.
They could make so much money if they would just sell a World's Worst Father mug with a picture of Gendo on it.
I'd be surprised if somebody hasn't already done that.
Yeah, there's got to be one on Redbubble, right?
Right? Yeah. On Etsy, someone must have, like, made one out of clay by hand. But, like, the thing that I value about the fact that Gendo, like, actually engages in that moment is in a story about Shinji, a young man who is struggling to form reasonable connections with everybody in his life, in part because his father is so terrible, gets the opportunity to stand in front of his father and go, Dad, you did shit. Would you like to stop doing shit? And his father goes, now that you think about it, I'm learning that I am afraid of you. And like reconciling the fact that his longing to be with his wife, the one person that he felt like he could actually have an emotional connection with, has so stunted his ability to form new connections that he can only see Shinji as a tool that he can use to get his wife back from the dead, is not only like ultimately rewarding because Shinji has been through a lot for several decades and I'm very glad the boy got to sit down and talk to his father about some shit, but like on a dramatic level is the observation that that kind of unhealthy family relationship can at some point be dealt with. It's a very sudden resolution. Like, therapy doesn't happen for a half an hour on a train. But the fact that it can happen is very reaffirming. And that means that Gendo has to be an active participant in that. And I'm grateful that that happened. Because that's Gendo admitting, there are moments when I feel weak, there are moments when I feel low, there are moments when I feel exactly the way that Shinji feels. And I'm learning that Shinji feels that way because of me. I wish that more young men could have those kinds of conversations with their fathers and father figures on a regular basis, but I guess a two and a half minute movie will have to do.
Yeah, well, therapy is not covered under the National Health Insurance Plan here, so...
Well, that presents conflicts and problems, doesn't it?
It does.
Oh, boy. So it's probably a good thing that y'all don't actually have giant mecha that rely on 14-year-olds to run.
Yeah, I mean, we are working on that, you know?
Yeah.
I know there's the big Gundam that can, like, kneel, which is honestly super cool, and I so want to see that. That is the coolest thing on Earth.
I mean, Gundam is a totally separate, emotionally traumatizing robot property.
Look, all I'm saying is that as soon as we actually have this technology for real, and it can work just like in anime, sign me up. I'm in.
I'm good.
I'll be a pilot. I'm totally fine. I have no problem with my mech eating someone else's head off. That's fine. Let's do it.
Nah, I'm fine.
Let's go berserk.
I experience enough trauma in my own meat body. I don't need anything bigger than that to give me more.
Oh, you think it's going to be like how the military uses video games to train people and desensitize them to killing? Like, because you're in the robot, it's happening at enough of a remove that you can be like, nah, this is just a really good VR.
Well, I think it's interesting you bring that up, because I think if we tie this back to Ava, you know, if we were thinking about how giant robots would be done realistically in the world we live in, right, there's really only one way that I can see it currently being applied, and it would be a military concept. Because who's going to spend literally the kinds of money you would need to build an actual giant mecha just to have it be an entertainment object, you know, an actual fully functioning mecha? So it would probably be some of that desensitization. But I think what's interesting about Ava is that it's kind of the opposite, that they're not desensitized. In fact, they feel what the Ava feels. Like, if an arm breaks, like, literally in this thing, like, people, like, their arms get all kinds of effed up when an arm gets ripped off. It's interesting that you raise that, because with Ava, like, the emotional and physical connections that one has with their Ava, whether intended or not, are actually pretty important to how they react to those things. So I think of, like, Asuka, whose reactions to losing, at least in the original series, become a huge part of her emotional and psychological journey. Or, you know, taking Shinji's, who, you know, at least from the very beginning, is incredibly uncomfortable with what happens to him when he's in an Ava, including the multiple times that his Ava basically goes berserk, and then later on, his autonomy is taken away from him, and he's forced to basically murder his friend. His friend doesn't actually die, but, like, you get the idea. And then in this, right, he finally agrees to do it because it is solely his choice that he's doing it, which I think is an important distinction, right? So, like, I think that emotional element is really interesting with the Avas, because how a military application, I mean, there are militaries effectively involved in this, but in the real world, military applications would try to make them desensitized, to remove that, which is part of what makes Rey's character interesting, because Rey seems so not like the rest of us. But when she gets exposed to becoming more human, like, or behaving like humans, that, I think, to me, is one of the most compelling parts of this entire movie, is that section with Rey. And any moment, it's not the moments with Big Robots. The stuff with the Big Robots is fantastic. Like, it's really well animated, etc. But it's those moments when characters are actually, thinking and self-reflecting and feeling and experiencing being human in traumatic or unusual or even sometimes just like mundane situations in the context of a world that's full of trauma. That's the meat of this to me.
At its core, on a meta level, the Evas in Evangelion aren't actually robots. I mean, they're obviously very visually robots.
Yeah.
But they're just extensions of the body.
But they're biomechs.
They're not separate from their pilots. They're not just bigger versions of, like, a gun or a sword. They're just their actual bodies in this heightened state of awareness of what it means to have one. It's why the AT field in the franchise is consistently referred to not just as a force field that the angels have that prevent them from suffering damage, but is literally the thing that allows us to possess an ego. And without it, we would lack our own individuality, but also it is partially responsible for our difficulties actually bonding with other people. And I think that, like, in that, like, military application observation, not thinking of them as weapons and thinking of them as just the bodies of soldiers is actually very valuable. Like, we are watching these teenagers be put in violent situations under the assumption that the only people who can fight in these conflicts are them. And then they learn that these things have emotional and physical ramifications, and that no one gives a damn what they are, because it's just for them to suffer on their own. And then we enter, like, the latter portion of the franchise, the rebuild, where part of that observation is, maybe you can stop doing that. But it means that you actually have to make the choice that this is no longer a thing that you want to do. No one can make that choice for you. And if you make that choice because someone tried to make it for you, the consequences will still be dire. I think that that's radical, not just in, like, the personal emotional sense, but through that, like, military observation is also very cool.
There's just a lot of ways you can think about this.
If there's anything that is always open to multiple interpretations, it's Evangelion.
That's part of, I think, its charm, though. In this, it's like, no, here's, like, this stuff that is so beyond any conception of what we would consider a regular universe. And it's like, yeah, here it is. Yeah, grapple with it. We're going to move on now because we got to be on a train in a dream image. So good luck figuring out what the hell an anti-universe is and what this really means. Have fun. That stuff I love. I could do with less, just if I'm honest, you could say less about what's really going on in there. I think I would be a little happier of just being like, I am literally having like an existential crisis of I don't know what's going on. But at the same time, like if there's one thing Ava can always give me, it is just like, to use the term, a mindfuck.
Well, I mean, you're not wrong.
Ava is just the one-stop shop for existential crises.
It really is.
But I will also say, and maybe this is, I do think that this is in a lot of ways more so the case with the rebuild, but it is still definitely true for the original series, at least. Anno is very good at drawing out a feeling from a scene that you have no idea what is taking place. Like, you can watch the thing and have no idea what is actively happening in the thing or why that decision was made. And it is still immediately dramatically impactful, even if you did not know. For instance, the very, like, ending panning shot of 3.0 plus 1.01 when they leave the train stop, when we move out of that space, we are now in the real world. I had no idea where that was.
And it's just panning across his hometown.
And that was really cool. And I had no idea where that was or why that was valuable. But I knew that it was valuable because I'm already entering it through the sense of this space would only be important if it's important to Shinji. And it would only be important to Shinji if it's important to Anno. I don't need to know. I just need to know that it was an important decision. I didn't need to know that Third Village was based on Ghibli Village or that Anno had personal experience in a space just like that. I just needed to know that it was important that Anno wanted me to witness the experience of people in a communal space trying to work it out in the post-apocalypse and succeeding. A lot of moments are like that, and it especially shines in those moments where it is obvious that the ultimate visual decision that the crew has made is to do this one weird visual thing that you would expect in Evangelion, but you wouldn't expect anywhere else. Like, for instance, when Mari leaves the Ava and suddenly all of the animation is no longer colored and it's just like actual storyboard sketch notes. I'm like, I don't know why this is the decision that you made, but I'm getting an impression from it, and that impression is valuable, and I don't need you to tell me anything about what your intent was. My impression is more valuable than your intent. And I think that Anno's capacity to do that is always radical, because as you said earlier, the capacity to be introspective about the work, to ask yourself questions and give yourself answers about what you're getting from it, is always more valuable than trying to get a hand of God answer about how you're supposed to feel, because the movie is about struggling with these kinds of feelings. And I'm particularly grateful that he's very good at that.
Something else I really love about that scene, though, when we go into the storyboards, is that it mirrors the last episode of the TV series when Shinji is plunged into that formless place and everything goes sketchy and he has to rebuild the universe. Like, once again, we are redoing this the right way.
The fact, as a result, that Shinji is like immediate decision in this moment is not, I am not making a choice because it is going to dictate what the universe will look like or because it will give me something. But because I think someone's life is in danger and I should stop what I'm doing and do something about that, it's actually really cool.
One of the things that I noticed in this that obviously does not exist in the original series is that there are a number of different animation styles. And I'm using animation broadly described here because it's not just what we might think of as more classical animation style that may still have been done in computer, but there's also like the Evangelion imaginary figure that shows up, which is like a like more realistic looking CG ray monster giant, which was honestly super creepy and scary. And then there's, you know, there's the moments we I think had already been mentioned of things like there are like these sketches that are there. But then there's also clearly the fight between Gendo and Shinji is done in a very unusual animation style, which I think is CG because of the way that the Evas move. It's not how they move when they're not in that style. So I was curious, Yori, your perspective on that. How did you feel about that decision to have so many things interwoven?
I don't entirely understand their rationale behind it. I will say that, like, this is probably just my age showing, but I don't love the way a lot of CG looks and moves. Like, for instance, the scene where Asuka is force-feeding Shinji, something about the ragdoll physics in that was very, just viscerally uncomfortable to me.
That's curious. Because I agree, and that's why I like those scenes.
It does a good job of, like, getting the emotional impact through. I will give them that. But on just a pure art design level, I don't love it.
They're very difficult to enjoy, but I feel
which
like that's...
part of the point.
Yeah, like, that's very obviously purposeful. As for that scene with Asuka, the camera work in that scene is very disorienting, in part because there is a moment when, if you're not really paying attention, it stops being a camera and starts feeling like Shinji's POV. And that's the point for me when it started to suck. I hated it, and that was the intent.
That said, I think there's something really effective in it as an inversion of the Shinji strangling Asuka scenes from EOE.
And I like, as a result, that they went so far to make that scene as visually disturbing as possible because of that. Like, just the sound of Shinji sputtering after that scene is just, like, very upsetting for me. But for a lot of the later, a lot of the CGI later in the movie, the feeling that I got was very uniquely tied to, like, the lore definition of Evangelion imaginary. Because I saw that as also very meta as well. That we are entering the space where the thing that we're observing is the Evangelion that is in everybody's heads. And the fact that this is the point where it becomes less pleasant and more dramatic. This is the point where we are surrounded with lore. Everything has more than one name. And we are rushing towards all of these things at high speed. And they're just very ominous and obviously have a lot of dramatic energy tied to them. But we don't actually get to the meat of the scene until we stop giving a damn about all of those things and just have an honest conversation as people. Really mattered to me.
Oh, going back to lore.
Oh, God.
Did I tell y'all that when I went to see this in the theater, they handed out a vocab list? It was useless because they didn't put in definitions, but they did give me a list of the technical terms used in the movie.
Brilliant.
What? Why would you give somebody a, like, here's a list of terms in German. Figure it out. Like,
no, it was the Tolkien for the movie. It was a little mini pamphlet with an illustration of Asuka in her special white plug suit, and then you open it up and it's a vocab list. You know, slightly more interesting than the postcards I usually get as a movie Tolkien, so.
They've done something like that for all of the Eva movies in Japan, if I'm not mistaken. When End of Eva came out, that's when they used to give you the Red Cross book that literally had a definition of LCL.
This is the only one I've seen in theaters. So I've missed out on all the other ones. In fairness, like, the giant ray made me regret seeing it in the theater a little.
It's creepy.
It's supposed to be, but...
Yeah, it's supposed to be, and I would have enjoyed being surrounded by that creepiness.
It definitely has a lot of impact on that giant screen.
No kidding. Because it is just... When she first shows up, I'm just like, oh no, no, stop. Go away.
There is a level of creepy, there is a continuum of creepy that has persisted in the Ava franchise for a good long while. But this is the first time... in a long time that has like shifted past the line in the continuum that is definitely weird and creepy, but still let's make this as sexy as possible, into I do not enjoy this. I don't want to be in this space anymore. So there's like the very plastic looking CGI Ray head, but there's also the still very plastic looking CGI mannequin bodies without heads walking in this like endless limbo space. I'm like, I don't like this at all. I'm glad that you gave me something that I don't like. Because I remember in End of Eva, where the mass production Evas turned themselves into rays and stabbed themselves with crosses and orgasmed visibly for me to witness. I'm like, nah, I didn't want any more of that. Give me this. Give me something I can't enjoy. Give me something I'm not supposed to have feelings about. Give me something that's supposed to be uniquely disturbing. Cool, fine. I dig this. And I, like, a lot of people... are troubled by the fact that they thought that it was supposed to look good. It wasn't. I don't think its intention was ever supposed to be pleasant. I think it was supposed to feel plastic and hollow, because that's the point in the movie where we got to.
Yeah, it was supposed to make you feel icky.
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense too, because this is the point in the narrative when we've like started to throw away conceptions of what is real in the context of an animated show, you know? And so it makes a lot of sense to sort of, especially in that sequence, to just like, here are some like headless mannequins and like all these other like bizarre and creepy images. Because, I mean, in a lot of ways, like reality is literally unraveling, like the deeper they go into this weird space that they're in, where they're having these bizarre battles in semi-spaceships. So... It's interesting, and I'm sure there's a lot there that you could just really unpack in terms of thinking about what the visuals mean that and so on, but it is unsettling.
Speaking of stuff that feels out of place, I like Kitakami as a character, but oh my god, her design bugs me, because Kitakami was the pink-haired bridge bunny. She doesn't look like an Ava character, like, not just the hair, but also the way they do her lips.
Yeah, she doesn't look like she's at work.
She looks like she got lifted from Carolyn Tuesday. Like, her art style does not match the rest of the crew in a way that feels very weird to me.
She felt like a character from, you ever seen that movie Little Nemo?
It's the one with the kid in the flying bed. I saw it when I was really little, yes.
With this flying squirrel friend, and he goes to the Slumberland, right? Mm-hmm. And like it's like this very flamboyant, where like the king of Slumberland's basically Santa Claus, but they don't call him Santa, and he rides on a little train, and it's like hilarious. But like it has that very, like the way that she looked, she felt like she'd come from that world, where there's just like this very Candyland kind of feel to her, with the way that she was animated. So I get what you're saying, because she did feel kind of out of place to me,
yeah.
Too.
Yeah, because the other thing is, the only person who has really blatantly unrealistic hair is Vey, because Misato's hair is usually purple-ish or sometimes blue-ish in a way that implies that it's black, and in the manga it's black.
Mm-hmm.
So Misato's hair is at the edge of believability for me. So the only person who has, like, this is a dye job and or sci-fi hair is Rei.
Yeah.
It was weird to have Kitakami invading that visual space in a way.
But like, there's also like the assumptions that we make about anime as an art form and the people who perform it.
Mm-hmm.
That when you see people who have worked for Gainax.
Oh, you have protagonist
hair.
Yeah,
when you've seen people who have worked for Gainax gather in a room and give someone pink hair, that person is either important or exists dramatically for a reason.
I mean, she did.
But like, in that workspace, in like, given all of the assumptions that we have about Misato and about Willa and the crew of the Wonder, it's very shockingly out of place that the only person who looks that dramatic is Kitakami. And that as a result, the only dramatic thing that she does is the one thing, which is still dramatic, but like any character could have done that when you really think about it. Any character deserved it. I would have preferred that from like an old school character rather than this like particular design.
Yeah, but like Maya's not the type. Who does that leave us? That leaves us Alba and Hyuga.
Alba would have done it in a heartbeat. Alba would have done it with an AK. Alba wouldn't have missed.
Yeah.
I mean, that was an interesting, it was an interesting scene, you know, to see these people, you know, reacting so violently to the idea that they're going to let Shinji get back into an Eva.
In a way, I think it needed to be Kitakami and Sakura, because they are the ones who, as civilians, lost more because of Shinji. Whereas, like, everyone who was part of NERV before Near Third had contributed to losing the world or ruining the world by virtue of their work there. Whereas Kitakami and Sakura are both just, in very real ways, victims of what NERV has done to the world.
This is true. And I mean, like, the real value that we really get from that scene is also very meta in its own way as well. Because it gives us, like, two of the best lines in the entire movie. Shinji Ikari is our savior and our destroyer. Which is, like, this very radical observation that this world in itself is intensely dramatic to everybody that's in it, and the only person who can do anything about it is Shinji. But can we trust the decision that he's going to make? Because we didn't trust it before. And the other very radical line, which I'm probably going to take to my grave, which I've literally written down, is the only thing a son can do for his father is pat him on the shoulder or kill him. It's so many feelings! Oh my god! And, like, I value the fact that Misato said that. I value that that happens just before a fight that ends with Shinji just talking to Gendo. Like, oh, so many feelings.
For me, the iconic line of this movie is when Gendo looks down at Shinji in the cage and says, "This is why I hate kids." It took everything in me not to burst out laughing in the silent theater.
Well, okay, we need to wrap up.
Yes.
Because we've been at this a bit.
We could be here for years if we wanted to be.
We could. So I figure we could end with a quick final thought, which will follow immediately after my admission that technically this should be an At the Movies episode, but we called it Screen Scouts, even though it's a movie. But I'm just going to leave this in there, and I'm going to pretend that nobody will have noticed until this point, because we're talking about something that came out of a television show, and so you were just going to have to deal with it.
Mm-hmm. We made you watch the TV series to get here, so.
Precisely. So with that in mind, I would like to start with Iori. What are some final, like a final thought you'd like to let out about your feelings about the end of the end of the end of Evangelion?
I just wish people would give Mari more fucking credit for how cool she is, because she is always there in the background pursuing her own agenda, and her own agenda is to fix all the ways that her classmates have fucked up the world. Which, hashtag relatable.
Fair. Brandon?
My two very quick final thoughts are, one, I'm not only very grateful that 3.0 plus 1.01 exists specifically for young men to experience that kind of space where you can have a healthy conversation about your feelings and come to terms with the fact that those feelings have had very hostile consequences. But I'm also very glad that Hideaki Anno is finally free, and that the result of that freedom is that in 2022 we get a Kamen Rider movie that's going to be really dope. And he never has to think about Evangelion ever again. It's finally in the ground.
Every time I've finished watching an Eva something, I have stopped and asked myself, is Anno Hideaki okay? And when I left the theater at like 9:30 in the goddamn morning after watching this movie, I was like, is Anno okay? Yeah, I actually think he is okay now.
It doesn't just mean something for us as consumers in that very selfish way that we consume media about this kind of thing. I'm grateful that it happened for him, and I hope that he never has to revisit this shit ever again for his own sake.
Well, I'm just gonna say he should not go to any anime conventions in the United States. Because So because I feel like being that person, I'm going to end with a final thought, which will be controversial, and I'm not going to defend it in any way whatsoever, and you're just going to have to deal with it. Although I will say that my opinion on this is slightly softened as a consequence of the conversation we have, which is really just me saying that while I enjoyed these films and this film in particular, I did like it. I will just say that I think that they were largely unnecessary and that a suitable conclusion was the end of Evangelion and we were fine in 1997. And I will not defend it anywhere past that point, and so don't ask.
Okay, that's fair.
You heard it here, folks. Don't ask Sean about Evangelion.
And definitely don't ask me my opinions about Rebuild at a convention. My translator will be there to tell you don't ask questions.
I kind of wish now that you had an audio clip of that thing, so anytime somebody, like, ever confronts us at a con, you could just play that actual translator going, do not ask any questions about Evangelion.
It would be nice. Well, that's it, folks. So thank you for being here. I hope this was informative and that you got a lot to think about. So if you'd like to let us know again what you think about this episode, past episodes, or you have a thought about the Rebuild, please let us know. skiffandfanty.com/listener suggestions. You can also follow us at all the places. Skiff and Fanty on Twitter and Instagram, and get the newsletter at skiffandfanty.com/newsletter. And always follow us on all the places. And also subscribe on patreon.com/skiffandfanty because we need money because we have an anime problem now thanks to Brandon and Niori that is eventually going to bankrupt me and I need money to pay for it all. So yeah, so there's that. But also leave us 5-star reviews on iTunes. As for me, you can find me at Sean Duke on Twitter, seanduke.net, and patreon.com/thejoyfactory.
And you can find me at The Rising Tides on Twitter and on Speculate, where I currently GM The Case of the Cinded Seal, a Blazingly Dark actual play.
And you can find me at Iori Kusano on Twitter, kusanoiori.com, and also playing in The Case of the Cinded Seal at speculatesf.com. Don't forget, when you're looking me up, Iori is spelled I-O-R-I. There are no L's in my name.
If you insert them, a giant Evangelion comes up out of the sea and bites your head off.
No, just based on the sheer amount of typos in mentions and emails that I receive, I am fairly sure that somewhere out there is a Kusano Lori who is getting my mail.
Oh lord, you should probably check on that.
Kusano Lori is getting my career opportunities.
Oh.
Speaking as someone who has literally had conversations with the other Brandon O'Brien on Goodreads, you should probably investigate that very soon.
Well, I will just submit right now that all of us have a doppelganger, and the appropriate reaction to that is, in fact, to have them destroyed. So, I have a doppelganger who is an actor who has my .com, and he will one day no longer be in this realm. I will have him sent down into the anti-universe, where he will be dealt with accordingly.
I have a basement full of clones and tanks of LCL.
Oh, well, that explains a lot about you. Thank you. Great. All right, well, I think that's suitably awkward, so on that note, awkward indeed. Ending and scene. If you want to support this show, you can go to patreon.com/skiffyandfanty or skiffyandfanty.com, our website, where you can get access to all of our fancy things. Our music comes from Holy Mole. You can support him and his work at patreon.com/holymole. Thank you for listening.